the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on this first weekend of our brand new year. We can look back to 2025 to a world that was extremely difficult in so many ways. But now, we must look forward to a year that will bring peace to many regions of the world and hope to so many people who currently live in war-torn areas or where there is violence, famine, hunger, and poverty. Here in the Vatican, so many events last year and two history-making moments in particular, the illness and death of Pope Francis and the election of a new pope, Pope Leo, the first ever Augustinian elected to the papacy and the first ever American, a native of Chicago. These last days we saw Leo XIV preside at his first ever Christmas liturgies, starting with the Vigil Mass on December 24th. On Christmas Day, for the first time since 1994, he celebrated Mass of the Day in St. Peter's Basilica, followed by the traditional Urbi et Orbi blessing with the Holy Father pronouncing greetings and the blessing in 10 languages. Sunday, December 28th, Pope Leo presided at the Angelus for the Feast of the Holy Family. On December 31st, he held the weekly general audience in the morning in St. Peter's Square, and then in early evening, he presided at First Vespers for the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, and the traditional Te Deum. New Year's Day, Leo presided at Mass in the Basilica and later recited the Angelus. I'll get to all the news highlights of the week in a minute, but first let me tell you about my guests in the interview segment, Craig and Laura Schlattman, Americans who came to Italy for a year as volunteers for the Jubilee of Hope, and who are also active parishioners of St. Patrick's, the Catholic American community in Rome. They tell us some of the highlights, unusual moments, touching moments of the Jubilee experience, how they found out how to be volunteers, their time in Italy, Rome, and St. Patrick's, and what they will bring home from this Jubilee. Part 1 airs this weekend. Now the news highlights of the past week. Sunday, December 28th. At the Angelus on the Feast of the Holy Family of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, Pope Leo reflected on how families can be a light in a society often marked by loneliness, despair, divisions, and conflicts. He called on the faithful to continue to pray for peace in the world. In the light of the Lord's Christmas, let us continue to pray for peace. Today in particular, let us pray for families suffering because of war, for children, the elderly, and the most vulnerable. Let us entrust ourselves to the intercession of the Holy Family of Nazareth. Also Sunday, Papal Almoner Cardinal Konrad Krajewski announced that Pope Leo XIV had donated 3 truckloads of humanitarian aid to regions of Ukraine most affected by bombing. A small gesture, he said, intended to support families that, like the Holy Family, are traveling along the Via Dolorosa of exile in search of refuge. In fact, 3 trucks carried a total of 100,000 food packets that, with a little bit of water, become energy-rich soups with chicken and vegetables. Monday, December 29th, Pope Leo welcomed a group of Spanish pilgrims from the parish of Santo Tomas de Villanueva from Alcalá de Henares, Spain. He reflected on their parish namesake, saying St. Thomas of Villanova, an Augustinian bishop, was open to God's action in his life, adding that this made it possible for him to do much good for the church and for the society of his time. Also Monday, Pope Leo XIV met with mayors from across Italy, calling on them to promote authentically human relationships in order to combat gambling and other forms of loneliness. He noted the demographic crisis, the struggles of families and young people, social isolation among the elderly, the silent cry of the poor, environmental pollution, and social conflicts as some of the biggest problems faced by towns and cities across Italy. Pope Leo went to Castel Gandolfo Monday night, December 30th, and spent Tuesday there, returning to Rome Tuesday evening. Wednesday, December 31st, at the final general audience of 2025, Pope Leo XIV invited the faithful to give thanks for the past, seek forgiveness, and entrust the journey ahead to God's mercy. He said the months just lived had been marked by events of contrasting significance, some of them joyful, such as the pilgrimage of so many of the faithful on the occasion of the Holy Year, others painful, such as the passing of the late Pope Francis, and the scenarios of war that continue to convulse the planet. Thus, the Church calls believers to gather everything, joys and sufferings alike, before God, asking Him to renew in us and around us, in the coming days, the wonders of His grace and mercy. Wednesday evening in St. Peter's Basilica, Leo XIV presided over the first Vespers of the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, his final celebration of 2025. In the presence of 5,500 faithful, he said the evening's liturgy possesses a singular richness that flows both from the awe-inspiring mystery it celebrates and from its place at the end of the civil year. He reflected on the mystery of Christ that points to a plan for human history, a plan that stands in stark contrast to armed strategies concealed beneath hypocritical rhetoric. Today, said Leo, we keenly feel the need for a wise, benevolent, merciful plan. He also expressed his gratitude to God for the gift of the Jubilee, a powerful sign of his plan of hope for humanity and for the world. Thursday, January 1st, Pope Leo XIV celebrated his first public Mass of 2026 on the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, telling believers that Mary has revealed the unarmed and disarming face of God. In Mary's divine motherhood, unarmed realities come together, that of God, who renounces every privilege of his divinity to be born in the flesh, and that of a human person who, trustingly and fully, embraces God's will. The day's liturgy marked both the Solemnity of Mary and the World Day of Peace. The Pope also explored the tight relationship between the two celebrations, noting that with Mary's cooperation, God arrived among us naked and defenseless, a newborn in a cradle. This is to teach us that the world is not saved by violence, but by tirelessly striving to understand, forgive, liberate, and welcome everyone, without calculation and without fear. Friday, January 2nd. In a video message to participants in the SEEK, S-E-E-K, Youth Conference in the United States, Pope Leo invited young people to spend time with Jesus, whether they are meeting him for the first time or deepening their relationship with him, and to always be open to what the Lord has in store. Jesus' question to the first disciples, "Who do you seek?" shows that he knew what was in their hearts, that they were open to God and longing to find meaning in their lives. Also Friday, Pope Leo XIV joined in the mourning of the families and of Switzerland after a fire on January 1st at an alpine bar in Kranz, Montana, caused around 40 deaths and over 110 injured. In a telegram in French to Bishop Jean-Marie Lovet of the Diocese of Sion, where the tragedy took place, Leo expressed his compassion and concern for those close to the victims. May the Mother of God, in her tenderness, bring the comfort of faith to all those affected by this tragedy and keep them in hope. Those are the top stories in the Vatican. Happy New Year.
This is Father Timothy Vaverick. We need to go to confession because we're sinners. Confession is the sacrament of penance. Whenever we sin, we ought immediately acknowledge that sin and ask pardon of the Lord. But we should also form the intention, especially if we've committed mortal sin, to come to the Lord in the sacrament to receive His grace, because we're always in need of growing deeper in His love.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN radio services transmit 24/7 on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates, satellite radio, and web streaming. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
This is a Messy Family Minute with Mike and Alicia Hernan. We love the rosary, but when you have a group of rambunctious children, the thought of praying a family rosary can be kind of daunting.
Maybe it's because your ideal way of praying a family rosary doesn't match reality. Or maybe you've always found it just tough to pray the rosary, but it is a most powerful prayer. Our Lady gave it to us to encourage, protect, and sustain us.
You may feel like your family is bad at praying the rosary, but the good news is that there's lots of ways to use this powerful weapon of prayer. Prepare the environment. Get rid of phones. Put away distracting toys. Light candles. Wait till everyone's calm, maybe even on the way to bed.
Or take it outside. If your kids are too energetic, do a walking rosary. And don't forget car trips when the kids are locked in your vehicle. And a rosary on the way to Mass is a great preparation. For more on this topic, listen to our podcast on family prayer at messyfamilyminute.org.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
I want to welcome my listeners to another brand new interview segment of Vatican Insider. Here we are on a weekend not too long before Christmas, and we're looking at a lot of big events in Rome. And I have two people today with me who've been around for a lot of big events this year, two American friends we met at our parish of St. Patrick's in Rome. And they've been in Rome for a year as volunteers for the Jubilee. So I'm talking about and with Laura and Craig Schlattman, and I'm going to let them tell you a little bit about themselves, first of all. So, Laura, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Where are you from?
I grew up in Colorado Springs, but then I married a military man. So we have spent the last 40-plus years traveling the world.
Wow. Well, Craig, you're that military man.
I am, yes.
And you're from?
Well, I'm originally from a small town in Kansas near Kansas City called Atchison, and haven't lived there now for almost 50 years. So
yeah.
As Laura said, we've been around a little bit.
Well, fascinating. Where have you lived abroad?
I was in the Air Force for 29 years, and we lived about half of that in Europe.
Did you? Were you ever stationed at Aviano?
No.
In northern Italy? No.
Okay. No, I've been there, but not stationed there. But Germany, Britain, Belgium. And, of course, we were in Rome in 2000.
Yeah.
We were in England. Yeah.
Oh, for the previous Jubilee.
Yes.
Jubilee year. Oh, wow. Well, that's so fascinating. And when we met at church one day, I was fascinated by the fact that they were here for a year. And so, because I had met other people, and I'm sure the two of you have in these 12 months, who have volunteered for a week, maybe relatively few for a month, but probably not too many like yourselves for a year. So, Laura, tell us how you first discovered you could be a volunteer.
Well, actually, Joan, 25 years ago when we were here doing the last Ordinary Jubilee year, we made a vow to each other that we would return in 25 years and spend the whole year during the next Ordinary Jubilee year, and we would be unofficial pilgrim guides to family, friends, people from church. We wanted to host pilgrims in our apartment, and so that was the initial mission to Rome.
Wow.
And so when we moved here, and it wasn't the holy year yet, we signed up for the Jubilee app. We downloaded the Jubilee app, and we found that you could volunteer at St. Peter's as official Jubilee volunteers.
Yeah.
So that's how we kind of fell into it.
If that isn't persistence, 25 years ago, that is totally amazing. You know, I mean, sometimes we don't know if we can look ahead 25 days, but 25 years and you made it happen. Now, Craig, how do you, you just fill out papers? Is that how you sign up? And
you actually go through the app, the official app. And yes, there are some papers that you have to print out. We had to get a signature from Father Greg vouching for
we're
practicing Catholics, et cetera, et cetera. And then we submitted that through the app. and received a word back, yes, you're accepted. We actually came and talked to the people here that were setting up the Jubilee or the volunteer process before. So we had that luxury because we got here before the Jubilee. So we got to meet them in person as well.
Now, I never thought to ask you, you've been here now, you know, a year. I'm sure you've learned some Italian, but do you speak enough Italian that you can answer people's questions in Italian?
I think so. I've been on Duolingo for over 1,000 days, so that's something.
Oh, my gosh.
But that doesn't prep you for verb conjugation and ordinary conversation with
and the
people.
Subjunctive tense.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, imperfect, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, but we learn phrases, and we learn to give directions and explain. And if we're stuck, there are plenty of Italian volunteers who work alongside us.
Sure.
And people from South America, from Asia, from all over that we can refer people to.
Oh, well, that's good. Oh, yeah, think of the languages.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, you'd have to have that.
Right.
You know, Vatican website itself is in, you can listen to 30-some languages, but I mean, the major languages, English, French, Italian, Portuguese, German,
right.
And then exactly. They have Chinese and Arabic and mm-hmm. Polish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing.
Right.
So, but now tell me, how is there kind of like a class you have to attend? You know, how to be a volunteer?
The training begins at the beginning of your volunteer stint. You have to volunteer for a week at a time.
Okay.
Or for a special
8 days, not a week.
I'm sorry, 8 days, Saturday to Saturday. So they ask you to show up at 9:30.
Yeah, they call a week your 8 days.
Uh-huh. Yeah. and they give you some training, but you know you really learn to do the job on the job.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so as Laura described, you have people that speak different languages and some that are full-time volunteers and they are the leaders and they show you what to do. And
yeah.
So you kind of learn as you go.
So, I mean, is there a classroom you're brought to and with other volunteers? How does that work?
It's just a meeting place because I know they have other presentations and meetings in that building that the info point is in.
Oh, on Via della Conciliazione.
Yes, yeah, I think the Dicastery for Evangelization is mm-hmm. in that building.
Exactly.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
So we come in, they have a little screen, there are slides. It's interesting. I found that in January and in February when we volunteered, the orientation was only in Italian. And we asked if anyone would could answer our questions in English, and we were told, solo italiano. Okay. Yes, Lord.
Yeah.
Yes, Lord.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so we learn as you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, there isn't an app or program or whatever it is. I read about this the other day that will translate as you're speaking. We'll put into writing. So that when you, like I'm holding, you know, the microphone up to you, and if I had this device or connected the microphone, it would translate into print, which would be fabulous for a journalist if I'm interviewing a theologian for something you don't want to get wrong, you know. So you didn't have any homework, though.
Well, they gave us a handbook beforehand,
right? Okay.
And so
was
it was
English.
In English, and it had a lot of the information.
For that.
Yeah, it had a lot of information.
I do want to clarify that now they do a section in Italian, and then they can go to English or Spanish or French. The orientation has evolved over time.
So. Well, they certainly probably saw that need.
Right.
And then you have Archbishop Fisichella, who heads the part of the Dicastery for Evangelization that always works on Holy Years.
Mm-hmm.
I believe his first one was 2015, 2016, the mm-hmm. Jubilee, mm-hmm. the Jubilee of Mercy, you know. But when you think about English, and I read an article to this by a journalist I do know, an article about a month ago that said the Vatican should really turn more to English, not just because we have an American Pope, and not at all, mm-hmm. and he's so multilingual, but I worked for many years in the Vatican in an office, part of the Holy See Press Office, called the Vatican Information Service. That was born because John Paul was a great master of communications and realized that meant everything in the church and mm-hmm. for the church. So he set up, he asked Joaquin Navarro-Valls at that time, a journalist, to set up this office in the Vatican, he said, bishops and the nuncios, the Vatican ambassadors, are writing us all the time from all over the world, writing, snail mail, maybe a phone call, and asking us how we can get Vatican daily news on a timely basis. All they were getting at the time, this is pre-1990, all they were getting were the Vatican newspaper. That's fine if you live in Italy or America, you'd get it in a day or a week. If you lived in Moscow, you might get it in 2 months.
Right.
So anyway, they developed this program, which was going to be news faxed every afternoon to the bishops and the nuncios of the world, right? I mean, this was a miracle by all communication standards. But what the Vatican did, they did a survey and discovered that 55% of the bishops and nuncios had English as a first or second language, and 38% had Spanish as a first or second language. And I don't know why they haven't used that ever since. Well, now on the Vatican News website, but in other communications, documents from the Vatican, or like you just mentioned, this was a fairly thing that just evolved during the Jubilee. But they didn't have it when you were there, yeah. And now we're not just talking about bishops and nuncios. We're talking people. We're talking parishes and pastors.
Well, and that's all online, too. So, I mean, anybody can access it, obviously. And it's wonderful to be able to do that.
But there's some things that don't come out right away in English.
Sure.
You have to wait for it, you know. So,
exactly.
Now, what was in that booklet, for example, that you were given?
It told us what our duties would be, gave us a sense of why they have volunteers to facilitate the pilgrimage, the pilgrims that are coming really from all over the world. Another section, and as you know, this doesn't apply to us because we live here, but if you volunteer, you live in a converted convent. They call it the Domus Spei.
The House of Hope.
The House of
Hope.
Well,
it's the Jubilee of Hope, so
yes, exactly. So, I mean, that's a communal living arrangement for food and board, and so a lot of it was about that. But it was really helpful, I think, to give us a sense of the primary responsibilities of the volunteers.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, because I did interview a single person who was here for a week, and she'll be back, I've forgotten whether it's January or February. The Holy Father has asked, you might know, has asked all volunteers, you know, I want you all to be in Rome and I want to thank you. So she was one of those who, you know, lived in a Girl Scout setting for the week that she was here, but loved every moment. She said, Joan, I could have gone to a hotel, but I wanted the, you know, the full experience.
Right.
But you're here for a year, so, I mean, you don't want that full experience.
It's one of the beauties of being a volunteer because you meet people from all over the world. It isn't just local Italians and, you know, some Americans.
Yeah.
People are from all over the world, so you get a chance to meet, you know, people that took a lot of effort.
Oh, distance is huge.
To come to Rome and to give up their time and their effort.
And their treasure, too.
And their treasure, sure. And so it's been...
Well, I mean, just the airfare from certain places.
Well, absolutely.
You know, you might want to be a volunteer, but you're always looking how you can pay your rent.
Right,
so
of course.
Your airfare will be a big challenge, you know. So now you have, I'll call it a uniform. How are you identified?
Well, they are bright lime green uniforms, depending on the time of year. For example, in January when we showed up, we were given a big lime green puffy jacket to wear, but not to keep. We were given a little stocking cap and a hat, and you also a vest. So if you wanted to wear something heavier or more waterproof, you could wear your own jacket and wear your vest over it. And on the back it says Voluntario, and it has the Vatican crest on the front.
Oh, that's right.
So people can pick you out right away. We called them Kermit outfits.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, the first time I saw one, I thought, I bet they glow in the dark.
I was going to say, you do stand out in
you
that
color.
You do
stand out, but unfortunately,
it's what some people call in America bubblegum green.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That, yeah, the bubblegum lime. My
but
goodness.
Now, over time, you're also issued a polo shirt and kind of a fleece jacket to wear so you can layer. And
you'd have to in this weather, like today.
And you the fleece jacket and the polo shirt are yours to keep, but you must return the big puffy jacket and the vest.
Sure.
And your badge, your official badge that shows you are a volunteer.
Right. Does your badge have your first name or first and last name on it?
Neither.
Neither.
It just has a QR code on it.
It just shows your
Oh, that's good. That makes more sense.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. How do you get your assignment for every day?
Well, there's two shifts, a morning shift and an afternoon shift, and of course everybody gathers at the beginning of the shift. And the leadership then says, okay, you three go over here, and you bunch go over there, and then the rest of you follow me, and we'll drop you off. So I'm sure you've seen, there's volunteers from the beginning there at Conciliazione.
Oh, yeah.
All the way down the way, up to the security, and then up to the holy doors. So that's
And at the other basilicas?
The other basilicas, there's people at the holy doors, and usually it's not this group of volunteers. It is volunteers, the Order of Malta.
Okay.
Have had people at many of the other papal basilicas, and of course they serve the Vatican for medical purposes, etc.
Oh yeah, they got their big medical center. They're small but very effective center.
Right.
So basically, I don't think I realize this. The Jubilee encompasses the whole city of Rome, obviously the papal basilicas, St. Mary Major, St. John Lateran, and St. Paul's outside the walls. But basically, your job, the volunteer job we're talking about, is for the Vatican area.
It's for the St. Peter's Basilica,
primarily.
Oh.
Yeah. Inside and outside. Because we are also inside the Basilica.
Oh, I don't think I knew that. I guess when I go, I either didn't see people or wasn't looking. Well, that's all the time we have today to speak with Craig and Laura Schlattman, Americans who came to Italy for a year as volunteers for the Jubilee of Hope, and who are also active parishioners of St. Patrick's, the Catholic American community in Rome. Come back next weekend, days after the Jubilee Year of Hope ends, with the closing of the Holy Door at St. Peter's Basilica, when they tell us some of the highlights, unusual moments, touching moments of the Jubilee experience, of their time in Italy, Rome, and St. Patrick's, and what they will bring home from this Jubilee.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.